This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are looking for your questions, Ask Amy Anything, even as we go through them every week. There's still questions about me being a married woman. It's crazy. I cannot profess to have any great answers or wisdom or experience to pass along yet. I am still a newbie, a newlywed. I don't know if the honeymoon phase is over. I know we haven't gone on our honeymoon yet. That's coming up. But if you haven't seen the latest video on our YouTube channel, it is the next episode in this series of Curiosity Killed the Cat. Right, that's you. You are the cat. You are the curious cat. But we did put up a fourth video answering your questions about my walk down the aisle. Although this one is past tense. Ask Amy Walked Down the Aisle and what that means now in 2024 and beyond. So check that out on YouTube, the latest Ask Amy Anything video version. And coming up next hour, your chance to ask Amy anything again. So send your questions to either Facebook or our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Still to come, QB news, as well as a brand new kickoff gimmick designed to limit injuries. Teams are in favor of it. Roger Goodell tries to explain it. But first, this is always a treat for us. We're excited to welcome former pro soccer goalie, pastor, author, speaker, Jesse Bradley. We like to get him on the show at least once a quarter because he always inspires us and makes us laugh. A father of four, goodness. And truth be told, Jesse reached out to me to ask about his March Madness bracket. So as he joins us from Seattle, why don't we start there, Jesse? How are you doing so far in your bracket?
I appreciate your advice. I went with North Carolina, nice. And then I think I need Tennessee to make it to the Final Four. But basketball, I have to say, was my first love. And that was my dream, to play pro basketball. Ooh. Ended up soccer was where I have more talent. Sometimes life has those unexpected twists and turns. But I enjoy watching. And we have a gathering. I went to Dartmouth, and this is a Dartmouth bracket pool. So it's fun to reconnect with people that way. And it's competitive. It's great. They give out some prizes. And my family has a lot of Dartmouth gear through this tournament. And we'll see how it plays out. But North Carolina is the team. I know UConn's the favorite. So I'm looking for an upset.
Are your kids into this? Because I know in my family, we do a big family bracket that now includes the husband. So we've got, I think, 11 of us in it.
It's more fun when it's the whole family. My kids, they don't follow college basketball that much, so they lean on me more, and then they pick up the action closer to the end, Final Four, and then when the prizes come, they're definitely on that. So they're all wearing Dartmouth shirts. They love the prizes. They love the championship game, but it takes them a while to warm up.
Even though it is March Madness and it's college basketball that's dominating right now, we recently did have the U.S. men's national team win the CONCACAF Nations League. What stands out about the latest national team performance?
We've won the last 3 years, and that's a strong performance for us. And for us to beat Mexico, and we won again, 2-0, that's 2-0. We beat them a lot, 2-0. That's our main rival. They're very strong. And we had a game in the semifinals against Jamaica, and we came out sluggish. I think we learned a lot from that. Sometimes when you have success, you get complacent. And I always feel like sports teaches us about life. And our team looked complacent. Jamaica scored right away, and then they had a strong defense. We didn't equalize until the very last minute of the game. Like, it was the final play, and we got an own goal from Jamaica. So we were fortunate to make it to the finals, and then we found our stride. Then everything was going. But the great teams have to learn how to win the struggles, and when it's not coming naturally for you. And I think half the game is the mental game, and our team just wasn't sharp to begin with. And really, the U.S. overall has frequently, with the top teams, had to play from behind or defensive, because it's new for us to be considered, you know, one of the top 10 in the world. And then when we face teams that aren't quite as skilled and experienced as us, we've got to figure out how to be aggressive and attack well, get early goals. And that's something that we're going to need to solidify, because the World Cup's 2 years away.
Right.
And it's coming soon. We're excited about that. This is a great preparation. The team is stronger than we've been in many, many years. So there's a lot of upside here.
We've got the Olympics before that. And as you point out, the 22 World Cup was a good step for them, reaching the round of 16. And I know the Olympics may not have the same prestige as the World Cup, but how much does it matter that this group, which features guys coming from all different clubs, in fact, coming from different countries in some case, how much does it matter that they have more time together on the pitch?
Absolutely. It takes a while to build chemistry. We know that the most talented teams aren't always the ones that win the championships. So you got to figure out the roles, the relationships, the locker room, the leadership, and come together quickly. And when you think about the Olympics, we're going to start out in France against France. So we're not going to have a lot of time to get the engines going and figure things out. So the extra practice is important. And when you think about the youngest generation right now in our nation, this is the future for soccer and, of course, other sports, but we are very, very strong. When you think of youth soccer, how popular it is, the number of players we have now who play overseas and are able to play in the top leagues,
right?
There's just a lot of breakthroughs happening. MLS is getting stronger, and we have players getting signed at younger ages. If you were buying stock, you'd want to buy stock in soccer right now, because I think the next 10 years, the trajectory is heading the right direction, and the World Cup is a springboard, a lot of momentum. There is a little extra pressure for the team to do well, because when you host the World Cup, you want to make a strong showing. So I would say a goal for us would be to make it to the Elite Eight, the Final Eight in the World Cup. That would be the mark, I would say, in terms of if we do that, it's successful. And the home crowd's definitely an advantage. But there's a lot of passion for soccer right now. And that's when you see things take off. From an early age, they get the pictures of the professionals, and they put in the time as well.
Jesse Bradley, that familiar voice. If you are a faithful listener to After Hours, you know him. He joins us from Seattle. Former pro soccer goalie, a pastor, an author. We enjoy picking his brain about all kinds of topics. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. This week, it's Holy Week. Regardless of what religion or denomination of faith, Easter and Resurrection Sunday are such a big deal around the world, not just in the United States. How does this week work for your church?
It's an exciting week, a significant week. You know, when I was growing up, we gathered around in the neighborhood, and we had an annual gathering, a huge egg hunt. You know, you have your seekers, your finders, and your hiders, all of that together, kickball, food, and it was just a big party. But when I was growing up, faith wasn't a part of my life. And then at Dartmouth, you know, where I played soccer, I was a psychology major, so all the mental health stuff, sports psychology is interesting. And then I took a religion class at Dartmouth, and that was the first time I wasn't seeking God, but I read the Bible and my eyes started to open up and a lot of questions. And I was like, Jesus was intriguing. And eventually I just looked at how he lived, his love, his light. And I was like, yeah, that's who I want to follow. So that was kind of my journey. I never expected to be a pastor. And then when I played pro soccer, I got sick eventually in Africa, fighting for my life for a year, 10 years to fully recover. And that's when faith really went deeper for me. And I ended up, you know, being a pastor too, now here in Seattle. But all that to say, you know, the spiritual, the emotional, the relational, the physical and sports, the mental aspect, there's a lot of interconnection there. And that was something I really learned as I developed as a player, and what's off the field and on the field are connected. I realize too, Amy, this is a topic where you've got listeners coming at it from all different angles.
Yes.
And for some people, they want to keep faith and sports as far apart as possible. And yet we live in that reality too, where, like, let's take last Super Bowl. You know, you had Brock Purdy, the quarterback, saying his identity is not football. It's not performance-based. And you had Patrick Mahomes saying the last couple of years he's really grown spiritually. So you have athletes who pray on the field. They'll have, let's say, a cross or a Bible verse. And even when you get to interviews, like C.J. Stroud recently, he shared his faith in an interview, and then the network cut that out. And some people love that. They're like, yes, don't let him say anything, you know? And others are like, what happened? How come you censored that? Like, that's inspiring. That's going to encourage people. So wide range of viewpoints, but I think it's a great topic to put on the table. And that's what I appreciate about you and your show too, Amy. It's like you go there with whether it's different sports, different personalities, controversial stuff. And it's like, this is a safe place to talk about it. It's like we're all kicking back at Starbucks and, you know, sharing our journeys and just considering the different aspects for athletes. How many teams have chaplains?
Yes.
Like, why do teams have chaplains? Because they care about the mental health of players. And a lot of times mental health is connected to spiritual health, and they care about their lives off the field. So it's kind of a holistic perspective that a lot of teams have.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think many people may not realize that as much as sports and faith at times may seem like worlds apart, almost every team I know of has a chaplain for sports like NASCAR. I mean, they have prayer before they begin their races. They also have a non-denominational faith service on Sundays before races. And so it really is incorporated into a lot of sports, even if we don't necessarily see it.
That's right. And it's optional. You know, locker rooms and coaches try to figure out, how do we walk through this together? For some teams, there'll be groups. Like when I became a Christian at Dartmouth, we had a little prayer group before the games. And some of the players on the team did that and some didn't. And we all got along. We respected each other, but it was an option. And for the people who were going, faith in some ways takes the pressure off. Athletes have a lot of pressure. How do you cope with pressure? And for some people, prayer is a part of that. Relaxing before the game, asking for some help. When I was a college pastor at University of Iowa, the Hawkeyes, shout out to the Big Ten.
Nice.
I would, you know, talk to the athletes before the games, and their women's basketball team right now, they're fun to watch. But guys on the football team, you know, like Dallas Clark was there, Aaron Campman was there. And it was cool to see these guys come in as freshmen and then just grow. I mean, physically they're growing, their skills are growing, but then just looking at the different parts of their life. And as they were growing on campus and then NFL, and just to see, you know, okay, Aaron Campman, integrity, you know, in Green Bay, and his character is a big part of, you know, beyond just the field, but the impact in the community. So character counts, you know, who you are when no one's looking counts. And for a lot of guys, that foundation, when you feel secure, when you feel loved, you know, when you're connected, that's just going to help every part of your life, and then including on the field as well. So yeah, you see chaplains, different teams coming together, and some are more involved, some are less involved, but it should never be forced. It should never be weird or manipulative. I mean, we have freedom of religion in our country. To have teams that stay united and respect each other with the differences, but then let people flourish, you know, in this area of faith. Harvard did an interesting study. It was human flourishing. And they looked at people who are active in their faith. Hmm. And what they found is that people who are active in their faith, they have more generosity, they have more forgiveness, they have more happiness, they have a sense of purpose. So that was Harvard's report. You know, check that out if you're interested. I've seen that with kids too. Sometimes when kids know they're loved, yes, by their parents, yes, by their friends, and then, you know, a love from above, a love from God, that hits in a different way too. And kids have faced so much pressure these days, and there's so much comparison in social media, and there's sometimes slander and gossip, and they're sometimes going to be insecure. And just when you know you're loved, that is powerful. Nothing's more powerful than love. I sincerely had a performance-based identity, and I didn't even realize it. Hmm. And a lot of athletes go into that. And who you are is not what you do. There's a difference. And when you have a performance-based identity, you often feel measured or measure yourself on how well you do. And it can lead to pride and shame, kind of a cruel roller coaster. It can lead to inflated and deflated. And when you step out of that and you know you're loved and secure. It's not based on performance. It's like you're set free. And I didn't realize it until my career ended. Soccer was gone. I couldn't get good grades. I wasn't going to an Ivy League school anymore. I wasn't playing pro sports. There was no stadium. There was no one cheering. And now I just had to wrestle with, well, who am I? And what is my identity? And that's when I felt like my house was on the sand and I needed to shift. And it was like, no, my house needs to be on a rock and it won't be attached to performance. That'll be a trap. So mental health, there's a lot more attention, appreciation. There's a lot more compassion around athletes, mental health. And along those lines, kind of mental health, spiritual health is considered as well. And I think we need to be in a supportive position to help people in all the different dynamics of life. And we are complex. Life is complex, but it's important to build people up.
Right. We've got teams all over the country that carry psychologists or that employ people who are counselors and can work with athletes on that side of their craft, too, because it isn't just the physical, the mind, the body, the spirit, all of that together.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I was growing up, I felt like there's a little more stigmatism or even shame if you went to a counselor. And that should never be the case. There's no shame. And right now it's a little more common, which is a real positive, that if you're seeing a counselor to process through life, to figure out your emotions, I didn't have the skills to identify them, to talk about them, to work through the challenges in life and process that. And where do you get that? Because sometimes your parents will help you to some degree, but also in school, you don't really get that. A coach might not provide that. So where are athletes going to get that? And it's broader beyond athletes. Like, where do we go to process through our deep disappointment when we feel despair, when we feel so alone, we don't feel understood, when we have feelings of anger or we think we want to get revenge? Like, how do you forgive someone? These are deep questions that are attached to our soul and our well-being and our mindset. And I didn't have the answers. I didn't have the coping skills. And when I went through that tragedy and my illness, I had to learn some new coping skills. My approach was be determined, just persevere. Athletes don't present weak, you present strong. I didn't know how to let people in. I didn't even think anyone wanted to come in to those areas of my life that were kind of confusing or dark or discouraging. But I had to learn to receive love and from people, learn to let God in, receive love there. And there was a healing process. And what I discovered is there's other options for coping with those things. And when you look at the youngest generation right now and how common suicide is, UCLA shared that with high school students, there's a quarter of the students are considering suicide. Studies that show, you know, we're up to about 9 hours a day on the phone and that much screen time and what that does to us on the inside. Like, there's a lot of struggles right now. And if we don't provide help, if we don't say, here's some counselors, it helps kids and students to talk through it. Sometimes the athlete gets cheered if they perform well on the field, but who's going to care for the one that's maybe not starting? Or who's going to care for the star athlete who's actually hurting inside and not telling anyone? And we need to go there and have those conversations, provide those resources. And I call it a gritty gratitude, learning how to give thanks and be thankful even when we don't feel like it. I didn't know how to crawl out of some of those holes and my mind would be on a ditch. And I say for all of us, there's an outside story and an inside story. The outside story is what people see, but the inside story is what you know. It's the more important story. And that's the area where we need healing and health and encouragement. And we all need it. And I say we need each other and we got to do it together.
Jesse Bradley's a former pro soccer goalie, and we had him on the show not that long ago to talk about another book that he's released called The Power of the Second Thought, How to Live with Indestructible Hope. And certainly that's key for people and many people searching for that in the United States and around the world, not just this time of the year, but always. So you can find more on his Twitter. But before we let you go, Jesse, you and I have something else in common, kind of. I'm running a half marathon Easter weekend, Saturday, which was great planning on my part. And you are running your first ever marathon. Why would you do that?
No kidding. I don't like running. I really don't enjoy it. And I like it that you're running as well. Hope is a theme. Hope is a theme with Easter. You know, you think about what we celebrate if you're a Christian, and death is not the end of the story for us. So that's powerful. But hope is also a reason I'm running, and clean water for kids, moving my feet. Just a couple things to think about. I'll close with this. there's a billion people on this planet without access to clean water. Mm. So that's one. There's a billion people. Second, in developing world, kids walk 6 miles a day and they fetch dirty water, and their water source is shared with animals. And right now, today, 1,000 kids die every day due to lack of access to clean water. So those are some realities. And when I learned about those, I ran 2 half marathons. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to go a little further. So this is a stretch for me. I'm trying to do it with the least amount of training as possible.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, on the hope side, we can totally change this narrative. And this decade, we have the resources to provide clean water for all the kids. And Africa is close to my heart because I lived in Zimbabwe. Like, there's stuff we can do together. And this is no fundraising plug at all. I'm just saying, keep taking a look around locally and globally, finding needs, and then finding something you can do. And this is a decade right now where the world situation around clean water can totally change. And we can be a part of that, saving lives. So that's why I'm doing it. My son, my daughter, and my wife are also doing a half marathon. So we do a little training together, doing it as a family. So keep moving those feet, Amy. I appreciate you. Like, I think, you know, you have so many people who listen closely to your show, and they just know you, your character. They know what you're all about and how you just inspire people. And you bring conversations that are insightful, and you dive deep into sports, but you also, you care about people, and you cover topics about life that are so relevant too. So thank you for all you do. Really want to say that. And if you haven't shared your appreciation and love with Amy recently, send her a message on Twitter tonight. Let her know.
You can find Jesse on Twitter at Jesse J. Bradley, a former pro soccer goalie. Of course, we'll talk to him as the U.S. teams get back into action for Olympics and World Cup. But he's got a couple books out there, including The Power of the Second Thought. He's a pastor, so a big weekend at his church in Seattle. It's always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for the frank conversation, Jesse.
I love our conversations, time together, and I appreciate CBS Sports for all they do as well. So keep up the good work, Amy.
I will do my absolute best. Nothing compared to what you're juggling right now, Jesse. If I had another question, it would be, when do you have time to train for a marathon? Although I guess he did tell us that he's trying to do as little training as possible. Whew. Yeah, I know that I've got one coming up on Saturday, a half marathon, 13.1 miles, and it's relatively flat. Supposed to be beautiful weather. I'll be armed with playlists and podcasts, and I'm hoping to not run in the winds and the torrential downpours of a tropical storm, because that's the last half marathon experience I had. Anything will be better than that. But yeah, if the temps are in the upper 40s, low 50s, I'm golden. That is my favorite temp to run in. Since the husband is coming with me and bringing his new bike, I got him a bike for Christmas. He's bringing his bike, and he thinks that he probably won't start biking until temps at least creep up into the 50s. So I suppose for the first half of my race, he'll just be hanging out in the car. I'm not really sure. Now, a lot of support you are cheering for me from the vehicle, texting me now and then. That's not helpful. All right, coming up, the Golden State Warriors are trying to track down the Los Angeles Lakers, I suppose, but more critically than that, they're trying to make sure they don't fall out of that 10 spot in the West as we hit the final critical mass of the NBA regular season. It's After Hours with Amy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Chris Paul with a steal. That's number 2,600 in his NBA career. He'll feed Thompson for three. It's good! Klay Thompson with a triple. And the Warriors lead by 13. Curry comes middle off the pick by Looney. Guarded by Adebayo. Two very good pros here. Curry off the dribble, lets it fly. Three ball right by the right hash mark. And Miami's going to call a timeout. Curry off a screen. Over to Thompson. Fires away and hits a three. Klay Thompson, that ball barely even stayed on his fingertips.
This is Klay Thompson, four-time champion with the Golden State Warriors. You're listening to one of the best shows in America. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Well, thank you, Klay Thompson. So nice to see you back in the starting lineup on this night in Miami. Big road trip for the Dubs as they're attempting to stay in 10th place or move up in the West, but hold off the Rockets, who are now just a game back in the 11th spot. And why did Steve Kerr choose to put Klay Thompson in the starting lineup again?
Just felt like you had a little more spacing on the floor to start the game. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's permanent. It just felt like tonight that was important.
Well, it worked. 31 minutes for Klay Thompson, 28 points. He was the leading scorer for the Warriors with a handful of rebounds in there, a couple assists too, but he hit six triples, and you hear a few of them there with Tim Roy on the Warriors radio network. So is it different coming off the bench versus starting? Well, of course it is. Klay's had a chance to do both now, though far more starting. That's got to be more comfortable for him, even as they get into the stretch run and are trying to mount another challenge.
I just try to keep the same approach, have fun, communicate, get great looks, and those three things. I'd say our assist to turnover ratio is really good. And that's always a great indicator of just a good night at the office.
Our defense can travel. You know, we've had good performances. Even at home, we've had big leads on good teams, but have let us slip. So, you know, we don't, our record doesn't, you are what your record is. That's what the line is, but we do feel like we've kind of underachieved on that front. And, but there's still belief that you can get hot, that you can establish the identity that you need to have to be a team that can win four games against anybody in the Western Conference in a playoff series. And until we don't have that opportunity anymore, we're going to still believe it.
Not a great night shooting for Steph Curry, 7 of 15, though he did chip in 17 points. And at this time of the year, you've got guys who are banged up. They're dealing with either nagging injuries like LeBron James, who didn't play for the Lakers in double overtime. So think about the minutes that were absorbed by his teammates, including Anthony Davis. Or you've got guys who just flat out aren't available. Like Bam Adebayo is talking about Miami Heat and the fact that they're dealing with a shorter bench than usual.
We've been in situations like this before. We've had situations where we've been out, man, backs against the wall, and then we come out with wins. We just didn't get this one.
Well, that's true, but it is fairly jarring to see a team in the NBA only score 92 points. That doesn't happen very often. Miami's a good candidate for it. I was also really surprised to see that we had two teams on the same night in the NBA not go over 100. The Sacramento Kings, they got blasted at home by the Dallas Mavericks, specifically in the second half. We're in the second half, so this is in Sacramento again. The Mavericks put up 74 points and only allow 43. So they get outscored by 30 points in the second half. I mean, for Dallas, who, you know, again, we're talking about this play-in tournament, these kind of 7 through 10 teams. I hate the whole thing. But the Mavericks are in the sixth spot, just ahead of the Sacramento Kings. And so Mavericks are doing work now. They've won 5 in a row, 9 of their last 10, along with the Rockets, weirdly enough, who've won 9 in a row. They're one of the hottest teams in the NBA. So the Mavericks are trying to stay in that sixth spot. The Kings are pursuing them. And yet this all, I mean, looked so lopsided for Mike Brown's team.
We got our behinds kicked, starting with me all the way down. You got to give Dallas credit. They actually played the way that we like to play. They just kept the game simple. Anytime we sent the second guy at the ball or anytime they tried to drive the basketball, somebody was open, they just made the simple pass, and whoever caught it stepped in and shot a wide open shot, or they caught it and drove it, and then they sprayed the ball, and they got great looks from the three-point line because they just kept making the same simple play over and over and over and over.
He just kept saying over and over and over and over. You know what's crazy is the Mavericks shot 39 times from beyond the arc. So they took 39 threes, made 22 of them. Their percentage from beyond the arc was actually better than their shots from inside the three-point line, and almost as good as what they shot from the free throw line. So yeah, they would find the open man. It was bombs away for the Mavericks, and they were locked in. You had Luka Doncic with 28, Kyrie had 24. You had guys coming off the bench to make triples. So it was a perfect offensive night for them, and the Kings really didn't do a whole lot to resist. So the Mavericks have the upper hand, and right now we're sitting in the sixth spot in the West. All right, coming up, we've got a brand new kickoff formation. It comes from the XFL, but it's brand new to the NFL, and there's a lot of positive response, though some who don't love it. In addition, Roger Goodell continually answering questions about how the league deals with the increase and the higher profile of sports gambling. I mean, right now, it's a main topic again because of Shohei Ohtani. So we'll hear the commissioner of the NFL on that subject. Send your questions for Ask Amy Anything to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or you can find us on our Facebook page. We're glad to have you with us, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Temperatures around 35 degrees here this afternoon as Folt puts his foot into the ball. It's going to be short. Fielded at the 4 by Hines. Coming straight up the middle to the 20. Cuts it back at the 25. He's got an alley down the right sideline to the 40. 50. Down to the 40. 35. 30. 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown. Nyheim Hines. 96 yards. Run, run as fast as you can. You're not catching Hines. He's your end zone man. Buffalo on the board with the first play from scrimmage.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Kickoffs and kickoff returns for touchdowns will not look like that anymore in the NFL because the owners have approved a complete overhaul of the kickoff play. 3 days of debate and discussion and conversation at the league's annual meetings, but ultimately the vote was nearly unanimous. 29 owners to just 3 against. So the competition committee wants to change this and try to relieve the NFL of one of the plays that has caused the most injuries historically. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. That is the plan, though it's going to take some getting used to.
A little bit of hesitation that I think we're still going to have to tinker with it. I think it's one of those things when you get it in play, you look at things and we'll reevaluate that as the season's going on. And if it's appropriate to make changes in the future, we will. So I think it'll be a big improvement. I think it will bring the play back into, a relevant play, an important play and an exciting play. And I think we can do it where the injury rate hopefully will drop.
It's a hybrid, but it comes from the XFL. And as the commissioner indicates, they are looking at potentially tweaking it. They want to see how it plays out, at least to start the NFL season. From San Francisco, Jed York has some hesitation because he said if it doesn't work or it's not a play that leads to any type of excitement or the changes don't work the way that we want them to, blah, blah, blah. Well, I want to know that we can go back and revisit even in season. We don't have to wait an entire season to decide if it's worth keeping or if we need to change it again. And I immediately went to the rule change on subjective pass interference flags, whether defensive or offensive pass interference. The NFL owners, in reaction to what happened in an NFC championship game, they were convinced that they had to add instant replay for the subjective call of pass interference. And it was so bad and it did not work the way that they intended that it not only did the call start to fizzle out, or the replays, I should say, start to fizzle out late in the season in which it was implemented, but quietly, they did away with it the very next offseason because it did not work the way that they wanted it to. So that's what one of the concerns that was expressed is really along those lines. Now you hear special teams coaches and coordinators raving about it. I saw one quote from Saints coordinator Darren Rizzi. He actually was part of the committee that was redesigning the kickoff for the 2024 season. This is going to be brand new to everybody, but the big thing is we feel we've made this play extremely relevant and, more importantly, a lot safer. Extremely relevant. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if you've seen the formations. There are certainly diagrams that are out there. And it's one that I could read to you, and you might maybe be able to picture it in your mind. But the number one thing is that the majority of players are downfield before the ball is ever in the air. So they're already over the midfield line and into the half of the field where the team that's receiving is generally set up. Okay, so instead of running while the ball is in the air, they are already downfield. Okay, so that's one big thing, which the NFL says will reduce high-speed collisions. The kicker will stay where he is. He'll kick off from the 35-yard line, his 35-yard line. But the other 10 guys on the kicking team are all over midfield on the receiving side, and they'll line up at the 40-yard line. Then you've got 9 guys from the receiving team who will be between their 35 and 30. So essentially they're only at the most 10 yards apart. Okay, they could even be within 5 yards of each other, all on the receiving side. They call it the setup zone. That's the name for it. So if the ball, depending upon who the kicker is, most of these guys can easily kick it through the end line or the end zone, over the end line into the end zone and then out the back of the end zone. But if the ball drops between the 20 and the goal line, which is now termed the landing zone, the receiving team is allowed to have 2 guys back there. Instead of 1, the receiving team's now allowed to have 2 guys back there. If the ball lands in the end zone or goes out of the end zone, the touchback is at the 30. If it goes out of bounds, though, so the kicker does not want to kick it out of bounds. If it goes out of bounds, the receiving team gets the ball at the 40. Gosh, that's a short field. And here's another thing that you'll notice is very different. No one can move other than the kicker and the returners, if there's more than one. No one can move. You're frozen in place, I suppose, until the ball is caught or it hits the ground. It's interesting. It reminded me of basketball and free throws, where no one can cross the line and get into the lane until the ball hits the rim. You have to wait. You cannot leave or cross the line when the shooter lets go of the ball. It used to be that was the rule. Then they changed it so you can now only get into the lane. And now a lot of teams will jump the gun and hope that no one blows a whistle. And generally, if it's even, let's say like everybody piles into the lane a smidge too early, well, they're not always going to blow the whistle. And if it's a made free throw, a lot of times they'll just skip it. But you're not supposed to be in the lane until the ball touches the rim. So in this case, no one can move until the ball is caught or hits the ground. And so it's kind of weird because you're just going to have, what, up to 20 players. 20 guys within 5-10 yards of each other, just kind of hanging out, maxing, relaxing until the ball comes down. That same special teams coordinator from New Orleans admits it's not the football that we all grew up watching. It's not your grandfather's or your father's or even your uncle's football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. John Fossil, he is the special teams coordinator for Dallas. This is his take on what we could see.
We have evidence based on the XFL footage that it's not a high collision play.
Yeah.
So Coach Seeley is right in his assessment. There's going to be a lot of hand fitting and hand fighting more so than the collisions with the helmet and the shoulder pads. But the creative aspect, there's no doubt about it. With our ability to use two returners, which the XFL only had one. So it's going to be interesting the first couple weeks of the season, Riz, what everybody's going to do.
Agreed.
Because it's only going to be what coaches think is best for them. It's not based off of anything they have previously in the NFL. So I would expect the first couple weeks of the season, everybody should tune in, and there's going to be a lot of different ball games going on the kickoff return part of it.
So one thing that they're hoping will happen is that the kickoff will become one in which it's more exciting, right? The kickoff will become one in which you have more returns. Okay, so here are the numbers. In 2023, only 21% of kickoffs were actually returned. So in other words, you had touchbacks and fair catches that accounted for 80% of the results on this play. By the way, no more fair catches. They can't do that anymore. The ball either goes into the end zone and is a drastic touchback to the 40, or it's fielded and it has to be returned. Now, there's a lot of traffic before you ever get to midfield. It's just not happening at a high rate of speed. Hand fighting is kind of interesting to hear from John Fossil on SiriusXM NFL Radio. So according to the competition committee and Rich McKay, who is the chair, he thinks between 50 and 60% of kickoffs will be returned this season. And according to the NFL's data, that's 1,000 new plays in the NFL season. It just won't happen at a high speed. It won't happen with the returning teams and the kicking teams colliding. I guess theoretically, we won't have the whistles that seem to happen on every single one of these plays, right? No, we won't have any blocks in the back or illegal blocks, that kind of stuff, because these guys really won't be able to get into position that quickly. So the touchbacks are drastic. Kicking teams don't want touchbacks. Returning teams are not allowed to call for fair catches. All right, so the ball can still be downed, and the kicking team is a lot closer to getting to that ball too. So if they don't field it, there's going to be a whole lot more guys who are close enough to try to keep it from going into the end zone. So we'll see. 1,000 more plays, though, with excitement, theoretically, but just at a rate that doesn't produce nearly as many injuries. According to the NFL, that's the goal. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.